Okay, thank you very much for coming. I told her of calling this morning that it was actually my grandfather's birthday today. And he said it right away, he's like, speaking tonight in the base manners at giving like something over a different hespit or whatever.
So it's not going to be so long. I know everyone's busy tonight. I was going to say a couple of nikudot. I don't know my grandfather. Sorry if I
grew up in New York. I went to like all Ashkenazi schools. So if I slip into Ashkenazi, have a rap.
The truth is I didn't really know my grandfather as well as I would have liked to.
He passed away when I was in 8th grade. And he spoke only Hebrew and Spanish, neither of which I spoke then. And my Spanish is not so good now. Neither is my Hebrew.
But let me tell you, I really wish I could have. My interaction with him was incredible. Despite not speaking that language. And like, obviously I spoke Hebrew around. I spoke a little bit Hebrew. I grew up, my father spoke Hebrew in his house growing up in Panama. So I did know when I was at that young age. But let me tell you something. He was a great big rod, yeah, in Panama. People in Panama, they could probably speak more about him than I can, about how the kavod that they give him in Panama over there. Huge rod, yeah. And when he would come to West Hempstead, I live in West Hempstead, New York, about 45 minutes away from here. When he would come to my house on Stem said, he would be machshiv me, a little kid, and be mechabed me, a tiny little kid, his grandson. He has many grandchildren, yeah. But he was this huge person who built a community from nothing. We'll talk a little about that. Mamash nothing. And when he would come over to me, he would give me kavod. He would be machshiv me.
Let's give you, I wrote down a couple of things that came to my head.
I remember when I was young, after he would daven in the morning, he would sit around my table learning Torah with his tefillin on, and when I would walk into the room, he would immediately stop, call me over, and like start speaking to me. I would able to like converse a little bit back to him, speak a little bit back to him. He would stop whatever he was doing, only to speak to me. Everyone could speak about like the tremendous Gaonut and Torah and everything else. But the small things, yeah. Giving kavod to somebody who you don't necessarily have to.
That's what he would do.
Every single time they came to America, they would give me personally a kiss on the cheek and $100 bill. I was like third grader. Every single time, $100 bill and a kiss on the cheek. Because that personal, yeah, personal. He didn't have to. It's all the things. It's all lifnim mishur hadin. He didn't have to. Yeah, big person. He didn't have to. And yet, he still did that. Every single time. V'od.
I remember once that we were sitting in the apartment in Israel.
They had an apartment in Rehavia, my grandparents. They ended up selling it after both of them passed away.
They had a beautiful apartment in Israel. I remember sitting around the table, and all my older cousins, they're all learning in yeshiva. They were able to speak with him in Torah, and I don't know, different chizuk, or like stam, things that are going around.
And I came into the room, and immediately he stopped the entire conversation, called me over, put it in his lap, and he'd like joke around, give me a candy or whatever. That's who he was. Yeah, people don't know about these things necessarily. He's great. This, you see, you walk around Panama. We were walking around the mall over there, and my safta was saying, "Oh, we know the people that own this. The Nike people. I don't know. Supposedly the owners of Nike live in Panama. Something like that. People own Nike factory, and they own Zara. I don't know. Is somebody in the room here? Yeah. Yeah." Alberto?
I know them.
Zara they own. And they say, we know these people, they own that. We know these people, that. And like, they would be mechabed us. But like, they
didn't have to do that to me. My grandfather, he was born
on the day that his family moved to Morocco. Hence the name. His name was Tzion. They moved from Morocco to Israel. And they called him Tzion on that occasion. When he was very young, his father, my grandfather's father, he learned in a yeshiva called Beit El Yeshiva, yeah, in the old city. Very famous Kabbalistic yeshiva. They learned a lot of Kabbalah over there. What he would do, my great-grandfather, what he would do is that he would wake up Rav Tzion in the middle of the night and he would pull him into the Beit Midrash. They'd be learning Kabbalah 2, 3, or 4 o'clock in the morning. They would wake him up, put him in the Beit Midrash. So his wife told him, what are you doing? The kid's a tiny little kid, first, second grade. He said, I don't care if he stays awake. I know he's going to fall back asleep. But I'd rather him sleep to the words of Divrei Torah than not fall asleep to the words of Divrei Torah. Why is that worse? So he kept it away. He slept in. Imagine. He's sleeping as a little kid in a Kabbalist yeshiva almost every single night. It has serious hashpah on you. When he was developing, he was clearly a genius. When he was 20 years old, he led all of Kashrut in the city of Yerushalayim. All of Kashrut over there. He was Rav Avadya's Chavrusa. He was Rav Avadya's Chavruta for an extended, a very long period of time. They're very close friends. In my house, we have a bunch of Svarim, the Rav Avadya, very old Svarim of Yalkut Yosef, the Yalkut Yosef Haggadah that they wrote. In my house, we have Lichvod Yedidi HaRav Tzion, kind of like in Hebrew, like, tell me what you think about like this Haggadah that he wrote, the Rav Avadya wrote. They were very, very close friends. When the people from Panama, they came and they said that they didn't have a minyan of people to daven, of religious people. And they needed a rabbi to turn, there's a lot of Jews there, but they needed a rabbi to turn things around. So, Rav Avadya and HaRav Tzion, they were both candidates to go. And they asked my grandfather to go. I think because he was younger. The people in that class, the people who were in Porat Yosef at that time, they were learning Porat Yosef together, they call it like the dream class of Porat Yosef, the Roshiva was of Ezra Atiya, I think. And the people, the names in that one class was my grandfather, HaRav Avadya, Rav Ben Tzion Abba Shaul.
Who else is there?
Who?
Yeah. Oh, there's somebody else. Oh, like I'm saying, like
Rav Addis. The all the Sephardi Gedolim that live now, the past 10 years, were in that class, and Rav Avadya, they were learning together. They were chavrusas, they were the best boys, and the people from Panama came. They asked Rav Tzion to go because he was able to do that. He went to Panama. You know, I was actually, my brother went back to Panama a couple years ago for vacation when he was in YU. And he said, you know, he came back home and he said, you know, the five towns, they found out about Panama. That's what he said. Because when you go to Panama, it's like a beautiful place. It's a perfect vacation spot. So many restaurants, two shuls, one in Punta Pacifica, right? And Paitia. One in Paitia and one in Shevet Achim on the main street over there. That was my grandfather's shul. Two huge shuls. And like the Kola over there and the Mikhlala over there. And it's a beautiful, and they have hotels for Mishabat. So he said, and he, if you imagine, he went there. There was nothing there, pashut nothing. And he did it all. He was the mohel, he was the rav, he was the shochet. He built the mikvah. He everything. He gave etzot in bein in religious things, bein non religious things. In business, he gave them etzot. He developed that relationship and he got their trust.
I just want to speak about a couple of nekudot, things to take away. Oh, stop, I forgot to mention, who were the people who sent him to Panama?
The people from Panama came, and my grandfather, he was rising up in the Israeli rabbinate. So, he didn't want to go. Of course, he doesn't speak Spanish. These people, they're not religious. There's five religious people there, come on. So, he didn't want to go, obviously. So, there was a bet din created. Sent him to go. Who was the Beit Din that was there who sent him? Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. I don't know if you ever heard of him. Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank. Rav Herzog, Chief Rabbi of Israel. And Rav Uziel, the Sephardi Chief Rabbi of Israel. They made a Beit Din and they said, you must go to Panama. And they said, we're making a chiyuv for you to go. It's a very to stay in Eretz Yisrael. You must go. And that's where he went.
And he went with nothing. So I just want to state a couple of nekudah, practical things to take away.
Yeah, this is something I actually think about all the time. The people in Panama. Amazing story. Amazing story of the people in Panama. He inspired them very slowly. He knew. He didn't have anyone tell him. Right? And imagine, why you, Baruch Hashem, you have amazing mashkichim, you have your Rebbe, and they tell you how to grow and get closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Nobody told him that. He went and he learned. I mean, maybe he spoke to people in Eitzot and what to do. Nobody told him ever how to do things. He knew in his own mind. He knew how to have people grow. And he knew that how to get people grow, you grow slowly. The first takana he made in Panama was amazing. Listen to this. First takana he made, no driving to shul on Yom Kippur. That was the first thing. He said, go slowly. No driving to shul. Shabbat, drive to shul. Yom Kippur, do not drive to shul.
That was the first takana he made in Panama. And now look, there's 6,000 frum people in Panama, more. Start very slowly, little by little. There was one step, there's a very significant step, was when Rav Avadya came to visit Panama. And, excuse me for saying this in the Beit Midrash, there was a wedding. They used to do the weddings in shuls, in the Beit Knesset. So, there's a picture in my house of the kala wearing close to nothing, okay? And Rav Avadya,
heads in the sitter like this,
making the brachot. Before the wedding, they used to do the wedding in shuls. So my grandfather said to me, we're not going to do weddings in shuls anymore. This can't be like that. If the chavo the rav, we're going to move the wedding to the club. Yeah, that's right. And after Rav Avadya came, they kept the wedding doing in the club. I mean, that was a significant step to move a little bit more. And they said, okay, once we already do it here, now every single simcha, I think, you can tell me, every single simcha is in this club. So I asked my father, why did he build something else? So he said like this, because a lot of people there, Baruch Hashem, because Baruch gave them the big matana, that they're very, very wealthy, some of them. Some of them are not as wealthy. So if you would have my grandfather didn't want to build another place. Because if you have two different places, you have one be more expensive, then you'll know. Oh, then everyone's going to get jealous because these people do it in the fancier place and these people don't. You know what? Takana, everybody now does it in the club. He built like a chevra together. Everyone's together, little by little. And that's the first message I just want to say from his life. He knew it instinctively, and we don't know it instinctively. So he knew that you have to go little by little, slow growth. And it's not impossible. You can see. You want Ein Raya Gadol Mizu, then the people in Panama, the Mamish, they were nothing. They were nothing. And now look at them, amazing community, little by little, little by little. And it's not impossible. The second thing that I want to speak about is, and this is the last thing before I just share a story, is like this. My grandfather, he had incredible tzarot growing up. Nobody really knows. I'll tell you a little bit. Incredible tzarot, incredible like pain thing that he had. He was the oldest of 9 children. When he was 20 years old, he was living in Yerushalayim, and he had nine siblings. His parents were very, very poor. So he was learning in yeshiva, and his parents said, we need you to help us make money. They sent him, and he learned how to become an electrician. During the day, he was an electrician. At night, he was learning. They never knew when he slept. He was staying up at the learning. They didn't know when he slept. There was once that my father tells a story that he was learning how to become an electrician. There was a big, like the teacher was on the board doing a math problem. And it was like a very complicated math problem. My grandfather said, no, you're wrong. You messed it up. So the teacher's like, no, like well, you're just a kid. You've been in yeshiva your entire life. He said, no, he messed it up. And he did the problem right on the board. He's a genius. Pashut a genius. And that's what he had to do. He had a son, my grandfather, named Yaakov. Yaakov was a genius. Also, Ilui. They sent him to Ner Yisrael. My grandparents sent him to Ner Yisrael in America to go learn. When he was in 8th grade, he was in the yeshiva post 12th grade, right? People go to yeshiva after 12th grade. He was an 8th grader in that year. And my grandfather learned with him privately, and he was primed to be the next. My grandfather would really... He saw in him special galut. My grandfather ended up telling my father that this son, Yaakov, he had tremendous potential. He never saw a mind like this in all of his learnings, all of his travels throughout Yerushalayim, even in his own son. And unfortunately, Yaakov developed a tremendous cancer and ended up passing away when he was just 16 years old in America. So my grandparents, they sent him to America, and he got sick in America, and when he was already got back to Panama, he was close to nothing left. He was basically dead. And they lost a son very, very young. They sent my father to Panama. My father's name is David. And they have another son named Chaim, Baruch Hashem, who's a Rosh Kol in Harnof now. Some at my grandfather's Levaya, Rav Avadya, was speaking, and he said, and Rav Tzion, he survived, Baharav HaGod, HaTzadik, Rav Chaim, who's leading Torah in Eretz Yisrael, and his brother, the doctor from America. I was like, that's my dad. Incredible tzara, yeah. That son Yaakov, he was, and they lost their prize at the time. When he got to Panama, he didn't speak the language, and he was expected to start leading community. He didn't speak Spanish, b'chol, and he always told my father it was a very big source of
struggle for him. They didn't know how to speak to the people so well, and Spanish is Israel. Imagine an Israeli person nowadays going to speak Spanish. It just doesn't go. And he said it was incredibly hard to try to connect with them.
And he always told my father. What he always told my father is that these things made me who I am. It was hard for him to learn. Yeah, it was not easy being an electrician during the day. These things made me who I am. And that's another just thing. People call that HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You tell my father, people call it HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yeah, why are you doing this to me? They don't realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't leave go of their hand. He's teaching you how to walk. And the more you grow, the more you grow, and these things build you. That's a road. And the last thing I just want to speak about is that when other people think things are small, and you know that it's a big thing, you can't think of other people. If you think about it, when he was going to Panama, let's say 30 years ago, nobody knew who Panama was. Nobody knew what Panama was. It was not so developed as it is today. And he got offered to become the chief rabbi of Israel, my grandfather. They came over to him and they said, if you come, Iran will support you after Avadia. He said, no, I can't leave these people. He said, this is like a long time ago, like 30, 40 years ago. Man, I don't know if it was Avadia, chief rabbi, right after Avadia. He said, if I leave Panama, I don't know if they're going to start using a microphone in shul this week or next week. The two options. He said, how can I leave these people? And he could have done huge things, and he would have been in the spotlight, and everyone would have seen, wow, look at this person. If he would have gone on the track, he was chief rabbi Kashrut Yerushalayim when he was 20. And he went to this far-flung country. Nobody ever heard of it. And barely any people in America hear it today. But he saw, like, this is something to work on. And even though it's maybe seem a little not small, Chas Shalom, but it's not in the line. It's not in the spotlight, right? Panama's for sure not in the spotlight. But he saw it. He saw the chashivas. He saw the tremendous... This is chashiv. This is chashiv. I'm going to build it up. Baruch Hashem, he started with five people. Now there's Kolel. And there's people learning two shuls that hold close to 1,000 people or more than 1,000 people. It's not. You have to go. For people who live there, you have to see. It's amazing. Pashut, amazing, amazing, amazing. There's a story told that my father said, I'm an aid in Amman. That, amazing. That, there's a guy in the community who hated the fact that all the Jews were becoming religious. Sorry if I'm going a little bit. Actually, I'm about to finish in about 4 minutes. 4 minutes. Maybe a little more. No, 5 minutes. Anyway, so he said there's a person in the community that hated the fact that all the Jews were becoming religious. He was living in the community as a non-religious Jew, and now all these people are starting to learn or whatever. He came into my grandfather's office, put a gun on the desk, and he said, Rabbi, listen, we can stay in here for as long as we want, but I'm not leaving until the rabbi is dead. This is what you're doing. You're starting to make all the restaurants have to be kosher, and all the women have to go to the mikveh. This is not for me, and this is not for you either. And my grandfather calmed him down, and the guy felt so... My grandfather told him, listen, this is what I'm doing is chashuv, and then I don't care, and I'm doing the Ratzon Hashem, and I believe in this, and I don't care about you. So I'm going to keep on doing it. I forgot, I wanted to ask my father today, what was this person's name? So the guy said, listen, Rabbi, I'm not buying into this stuff, but before I die, I want you to pray with me to Hashem. If there is Hashem out there, I want you to pray with me. So comes a couple years later, he wasn't in the community, he was a guy on the side, my grandfather didn't have so much cash to him. So my father was watching Panamanian soccer qualifier for the Olympics, I think it was. Something like that. And my grandfather gets a call that this guy from the hospital, my grandfather ran the Chevra Kadisha also, I forgot to mention. And my mom's everything. that this guy passed away. This guy passed away. My grandfather said, no, do not move him from that room. I'm coming right there right now. Passed away. Okay. My grandfather walked. My father's aiding that man to the story. My grandfather walked into the room. The guy picks up his head and says, Rabbi, I was waiting for you. Where have you been? You told me you'd pray with me before I passed away. They said the Shema together. The guy, he never was religious in his life. And my grandfather would say Shema, he would say Shema Yisrael, and then they would go all the way through V'haya, V'hayu ad Bar Meila, and then V'haya, and then Vayomer. The guy never went to Hebrew school, Pashut, very. There's no way he would have known the following. He said after, he said Echad, he said Chatati, Aviti, Pashati, and then he died. These stories were B'chol Yom Vayom, B'chol Yom Vayom, the Klausenberger Rebbe, famous Klausenberger Rebbe, he was having a surgery, and he said, I'm not going to surgery until I get a bracha from Rabbi Levi in Panama. That's what he says. So they got my grandfather on the phone, and my grandfather said, Rebbe, you're having a surgery now, it's life and death. Next year, you're going to be dancing at your grandson's wedding. Kachab.
There's a lady in my own community. Her name, if you want to check out, her name is Riva Holzer.
Yeah, Riva Holzer.
Her and her husband, they were married for about 15 years, didn't have any children. My grandfather, a couple years before he passed away, came to West Hempstead, and they said, listen, even like some Sephardi Rav, these people are Ashkenaz, even a Sephardi Rav, we'll get to take a bracha from him, we just need one children. They go to my grandfather speaks to them, and he said, who's your doctor? And they said, some guy in the hospital in New York. My grandfather said, switch to the Jewish doctor. You be zochet to banim. Switch to the Jewish doctor, you be zochet to banim. Switch to the Jewish doctor. A year later, they had twin boys. That was a couple years before he passed away.
Last thing was that the day before he went to the hospital, it was, I think, Shmini Atzeret, in the year 2008. He never did this before. He called all... There's many more stories, though. If you want more stories, we can talk later. Many, many more. And my father, I can get him on the phone also. There were the people... It was the Shmini Atzeret, and he called all the people in Panama together for... to everyone come by to get a bracha. I don't know, maybe some of you remember this. Everyone... He never did this before. Everybody come, Shmini Atzeret, come and get a bracha. That night, he ended up going to the hospital, and that was the beginning of, unfortunately, the end of his life. He was not a person in this world. But at the same time, he was very much in this world. Like I started off in the beginning, he was machshiv everyone. My father lived in America, he'd give them phone calls all the time. And I regret the fact that he made my father promise that he'd teach me Hebrew. Because he wanted to speak with me. So teach him Hebrew. And my father tried, and they bought programs on the computer, and they tried, and I never wanted to do it. And I have a chalisha radat that I didn't try.
I just want to share a quick piece of Torah, my grandfather's own chiddush and learning, and then we'll finish tonight.
He said like this, this is my grandfather's Torah. My father claims that there's a couple of notebooks written down of his own chiddush Torah, but they're not published or whatever. And my father told me this is his nice piece of Torah that he had. We say at the end of people learn, when they're done learning, they say the line in the Gemara Brachot, Daf Chaf Gimel Amud Bet. Then it's usually translated into English as Ratzah Kadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Lizakot to give zechut, to give merit to Yisrael. Therefore, what did he do? He gave them more Torah mitzvot, to have more zechut. The more things I'm able to do, the more zechut I can have klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. My grandfather said, maybe you could read the Gemara like this. We know Hanukkah is coming up. My grandfather's Yorah says, Chof Chav Vav Cheshvan, almost exactly a month before. Today is Chav Zayin Cheshvan tomorrow. Yeah, almost exactly a month before Hanukkah. He said, if you could think about it, we know that Shemen Zayit Zach is what we're supposed to use for Hanukkah candle. Shemen Zayit, olive oil, Zach. Pure Zayit oil. That's what the Zach means, pure. Said my grandfather, that's how you read the Gemara. Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu Le Zakot Et Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to purify Yisrael. The more mitzvah and Torah we learn, the more mitzvah and Torah we do, it makes us people who are more godly, makes us more pure and pure and pure. And that's who we can come up with Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that's who a person who he was. Thank you very much for coming. Really appreciate it, and have a good night. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.